Hi-Fi Dream is the deep dive. That was a band called Curve. A big, big deal in my life. Song is called Horror Head. Horror Head. Hard to say that. Horror.
Horror Head. Yeah.
Horror Head. Maybe that's better. Horror. Horror. Anyway. Before that was Thea by Goldfrapper. Thea. What did you think of the Curve song? I'm going to tell you a good story about Curve, but go ahead, tell me what you think.
Okay, so first of all, if you had not told me the name of the band, I would have said, oh, that's another garbage song. And that's unfair, I know.
That's okay.
But that's to the extent of what I know about Curve, which is nothing. So I don't know how I missed that one, but I did like it. I liked that the female vocals and the grungy, semi-grungy guitar work mixed with the good beat. It was a good beat.
Thick yes. Program beats.
Yes.
Guy girl.
Yeah. And I think it sounded good on vinyl. Like I listened to it on YouTube to preview the show because I couldn't find it on Spotify. And I thought, oh, this would sound really good in a better format.
Even wrote down your notes, right?
Yes, because the YouTube recording or the sound just sounded flat to me.
Right.
But I could hear all these atmospherics and the guitars and the beat, and so it was intended to sound fuller. And I think that album that you played is much fuller. And it's a nice special edition red, smoky colored vinyl. So it's cool.
Yeah, and it's music on vinyl. They only put out limited edition stuff. So it's usually like 1,000 copies, 2,500 or 5,000. And they're always immaculate pressings. Like every detail on this is good. Like the jacket has almost got a texture to it. The inner sleeve is like a high quality, like, you know, anti-static one. Yeah. Everything about it is good. The sound of the pressing is good. So yeah, it's worth it to pay an extra 40, like you're paying 45 or 50 as opposed to like a $25 record. But well worth it. Go ahead.
Let me ask you a question. Is when they do a limited edition like that, why do they do that? Is it economically better for them or worse to stop after 2,500 copies?
It's actually, it's twofold. First of all, it puts a higher value on the record itself, which people feel
it's
like.
Collectible.
Sometimes they'll say like it's limited edition, but like what is limited? Limited to that person could be 100,000 copies, right? As opposed to 500,000. But limited to me is like 1,000, 1,500, 2,500, like that.
Right.
Which means you're getting something that not every, once it's gone, it's gone. And I like the squeeze record behind you that I gave you. I know for a fact, because I printed that record myself. Like
right.
I funded it.
Right.
There was only 2,500 copies of that. So like, you're never going to see another copy unless somebody steals it from me, right?
And
steals the idea. So that's what makes it valuable.
Right. But as the producer, do you really care? Why do you care that it's valuable to the owner when you just want to make money off of that?
Well, that's I think a lot of artists don't really care as much about the money because they're not usually have limited edition is going to be a little more expensive.
Okay,
but
so
it's
you can
also,
charge more.
Do you realize how expensive it is to print vinyl and to
that's
press
the part
it?
I don't know.
Very expensive.
Right.
People complain about what it's $30 a record, $35 a record, whatever. There's no easy way. Like the process
the tooling,
of printing vinyl and doing it is like painstaking and long.
Mm-hmm.
There's only two, and I'm not exaggerating, there's two vinyl companies that produce vinyl in this country, and then there's one in
today.
Sweden, there's one in Germany, and there's two in the States. So there's a backlog. So if you're not a major label and you want to have a record printed, there's a good chance you won't be able to get in the queue for a year or two. Like I wanted to put out a limited edition vinyl about 5-6 years ago. It would have taken almost 2 years to get it done.
Okay.
Because there's so many people waiting.
Okay, so you basically you're in line, you set it up, you put your tools on there. They do a run and that's it because someone else is coming in.
There's also like the idea that for the manufacturers of the vinyl, like this here, Music on Vinyl probably has its own little private printing press, like that can only handle small amounts.
Sure.
Like they could do it. They can't mass print, but they could make a really good quality one so it costs a little more.
Right.
That's a very specific thing. But for the masses, for the majority of what you see that come out, they're coming from like 3 or 4 different places around the whole world.
Yeah.
There aren't that many left. Now, there should be more, but they're super expensive and only certain people know how to even use them and properly print a record.
Yeah.
Back in the 70s, 80s, there were all over the country. There's like 10 of them or 15 of them, but
oh,
they went away.
Right, right. And I've seen videos. It's a very manual process.
Yeah, very, very.
There's a person moving this to that and press, you know.
And every pressing is different. So, like, out of these 15 or 2,500 that I bought for Curve, they probably all sound similar, but one might sound great and the next one might sound a little flat because each one individually is getting pressed and they have to imprint the sound on it. And like, there's a lot of things that could go wrong. But if you see a lot of reissues, like records like Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd, there's like reissues that come out every 5 years or so.
That's right.
And if you go and look at the reviews, you'll see somebody will be like, don't ever buy the 2017 reissue because it sounds awful.
Mm-hmm.
Or like the best pressing is the original pressing or this pressing, you know? Yeah. It's just a very finicky process.
It's like a pain in the butt to
me. It could easily go wrong for vinyl. Some records I buy, I'm just like, this sounds horrible.
That's too bad.
Not even listenable, but it's cool to have it. I guess, you know, but I read reviews sometimes and people are like, this is awful. I can't even keep it. I'm going to send it back and whatever. But, see, that's a little bit of a nutshell on it. It's hard. It's a very deep topic, but quick story. Back in 1995, my friend, Marco and Sal introduced me to this guy, Chris, who ended up being the guy, the name in
mine is Chris.
We started a band called Twilight Garden. And now Marco and Sal were brothers and they knew me from high school, but they were like, Greg's kind of different with his music taste. And none of us really know the music he knows, but there's this guy, Chris, who's dating our cousin, right? It's like that he would probably get along with and we should start a band. Because they were into like proggy stuff like Genesis and stuff like that, like prog rock and then Rush and things like that. And we were, Chris, who I had then met, was into this band like Curve and Slowdive. And like I said, he introduced me to almost all the bands that I became, that became part of the fabric of my life, where I really came of age, right? Came into my own, so to speak. And so I remember taking a drive with him and he was like introducing me to music and I was introducing him to music too, but he was a little older than me. So he had a little more experience, had already been through college and already, you know, he's kind of gone through it a little bit. And I was still sort of finding who I was.
Right.
So he was playing me all these bands and I remember being blown away by Slowdive and Cockatoo Twins and whatnot. Then this band Curve comes on and he's like, have you ever heard of Curve? I'm like, never heard of him. He's like, how is that possible? Blah, blah, blah. And this was again, right around the time of Garbage, I guess, right?
Yeah.
When they just broke.
Okay.
But this band had been around a minute and we were both sitting there and we kind of had this feel like he wanted it to be more of a dark, depressing kind of sound. And I kind of wanted it to be more like a little bit more bright and like upbeat at the same time and not so downtrodden. But, you know, so we were kind of battling over what our sound should be.
Got it.
Right? And not battling, but like kind of hedging on it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The other two guys wanted it to be more like heavier and faster, whatever.
That's tough.
But they weren't going to have a say because they were really not songwriters. They were just going to play, right?
Okay.
So anyway, he played this for me, this Curve album.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we kind of looked at each other while we're driving. We're drinking Dunkin' Donuts coffee and like, he was like listening. And I looked at him and he looked at me and he's like, this is our sound.
Nice.
And it was Twilight Garden at that time. And we were like, how are we going to do this without electronic beats? Like we have a drummer in this group, you know?
Yeah.
So we kind of took the guitar sound and even the vocal sound to an extent, even though it was a female, but like the breathier, like back in the mix, it was like hidden a little bit, not so up in the mix.
Okay. So you really studied it.
But it really became minus Chris that took the sound of the beats with
later,
the guitars.
I see.
Like, because we did use beats and no drummers in minus Chris.
Oh.
So it really was, that was the sort of, what do they call that? The something print? The prototype, maybe?
Right. The DNA.
Of what became minus Chris. Mm-hmm. But it was in that moment driving around listening to that album. And I think it was even on cassette at that time. Like he had it on cassette.
Yeah.
And that was like, you know, oh my God. And I fell in love with Curve. So it was like, that was like the beginning for me with a lot of what I ended up doing musically.
An early influence, basically.
Very much so.
Yeah. Building block, essentially.
Building block stuff. So Curve, Horrorhead from the album Doppelganger was what wrapped up that set. We're going to head into our next set now, which is where the electro vibes come back in. Electronic, literally the pioneering group of electronic music, EDM, house, drum and bass, all of it started with the band that's in your hand right now.
Kraftwerk, which I heard, I think, probably not in 1983. I probably heard this in 1987 or 88. And I think it was either on the radio, late night, one of those new age kind of shows, I think. And I want to, I get it confused with something called The Quiet Storm. I'm not quite sure. But it was this kind of bung 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 bung, which was so bright and positive, but with a really heavy electro beat. And it was such an interesting contrast to me. And I think I even at the same around that same time I heard that song was for people breakdancing, because it was very hip hop sounding actually. But little did I know what it was actually called and who the band was, because I just heard it. I didn't see it. And later on, it was much, much later on when I found out the name of the song was Tour de France, which I probably mentioned before. I'm a big cycling fan.
Which we should talk about that before the end.
I'll mention it a little bit. And the album cover for this 12-inch, it has these, it's a really cool, iconic album cover with four cyclists racing down the cover.
Very French looking.
With the French flag colors on it, which is ironic because Kraftwerk is German, yeah, right? And so they're singing a song about a French sport. And the irony of all this is, I don't think, I've watched a lot of Tour de France videos and coverage over the years since I was a teenager. Never once have I heard this song as the backing soundtrack for the broadcast. So there's something about it that the cyclists don't get, which is ironic because to me, to have a band, a song that I like mixed with a sport that I like, obviously they should go together. But the producers of the sound guys don't agree with me. And the other ironic thing is some of the best music from Tour de France was created by John Tesh, who I think you probably know.
He's married to Connie Selleck, I think, too. He's a composer.
But he originally was a sports broadcaster
and
for
also,
CBS Sports.
And also, was it like Entertainment Tonight?
He was a host on ET after he stopped being a sports commentator. But it was when he was commentating for Tour de France that he took his hobby, which was making music, and made some backing tracks for his broadcast. And they were some cool stuff, I'm telling you. To this day, many of the great battles between Greg LeMond and Bernard Hinault, some of the great cyclists who didn't get busted for doping necessarily, but some of their battles were to the soundtrack from John Tesh.
Wild.
I digress. But this song, though, it's so good as far as electronic synthesizer music from its day, 1983, still sounds so clean. And the lyrics are quite interesting, actually, if you speak French. They're basically rattling off many of the terms you would hear during Tour de France about the route or the peloton, which is like the main group of cyclists. So it is legit in that they were true to the sport. But it's just ironic that it's not really a cycling song. And the only thing that's probably also strange is in the beginning you hear this kind of heavy breathing, which sounds kind of vulgar, right? But it's actually, I think it's intended to be the cyclist riding. Yes.
Right, you're gonna be out of breath.
But you never, I've ridden next to people out of breath riding up hills. No one actually sounds like that. You can sound more like,
let's be fair to these musicians. These aren't cyclers now.
Yeah.
They're musicians and they're weird. They were very robotic men making electronic music before anybody else, so they get some slack.
That's amazing.
They weren't
though.
Riding bikes.
No, I love the song. I love the Kraftwerk, and I picked this up only recently, and I'm really glad I did.
Oh, it's an awesome looking record.
Yeah,
I have the full length of this.
Yeah,
and it's so crazy how this came out in 70, or this album came out in 83.
Mm-hmm.
Most of their music came out in the mid-70s.
Right.
And it sounds better and newer than music that came out in 2023.
Agreed.
22.
The production quality.
How they did it, I have no idea. And it's still, like, I remember hearing something from their 76 album. I think it's 76. It sounds like modern house music, modern electronic house music.
Yeah.
And it's insane. This happened at least 20 years before, or maybe 15 years before house music was even a known thing.
Yeah, My understanding is they were tinkerers and engineers, and so they built the machines that made the sounds.
Unbelievable.
And that's what you had to do with analog back then. There were no tools to do that.
Yeah, they were using those, like, I forget those, the system. It's like patches. You patch sounds.
Yeah, yeah.
By plugging things into different spaces to get different sounds.
Yep.
It's really wild.
Yep.
But yeah, they were weird too, if you ever seen them.
Pioneers and grandfathers,
yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah, they look at, like, now they look like grandfathers. But yeah, great. Brilliant record. So, like I said, possibly, and I don't even think this is a stretch, the most influential electronic artist in history. And I think anybody who's ever made electronic music would agree with that.
Yeah, and probably sampled quite often, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So that will be the first track in this, Kraftwerk. Tour de France. Then we'll do a band that I played a lot on the show. Kind of embarrassing, but not really. Pet Shop Boys. Every song I've played, though, is vastly different. And this one is no different.
True.
It's vastly different than the prior.
It's true.
I'm obsessed with them. And again, it's coming out of Kraftwerk. These guys were directly born out of Kraftwerk.
It's a good choice.
They were listening to Kraftwerk. That's what they wanted to make their sound. So
you don't have to apologize for playing Pet Shop Boys.
Thank you. I feel like I do sometimes and I shouldn't, but okay. So Tour de France first, then the Pet Shop Boys. I'm not embarrassed about that because it's so good. Let's do it.
On the deep dive.
Thank you. The songs and artists that inspired generations of musicians. It's the Hi-Fi Dream Deep Dive.
Dream, it's the deep dive. That was Pet Shop Boys, of course, Home and Dry, which I love. I love the song. I like the sentiment behind the song. That is the remix version of it. It's not the album version. The album version is not quite as dancey.
Not at all. Not with that trance beat.
You were surprised at how fast it was.
I was. It was. I don't think I could keep up with it. It was probably 160. BPMs, but it reminded me a lot of the movement of the trance, like the rave scene and the techno going towards, actually this is 2002, yeah, that's about right. I think we went through jungle and then trance and then kind of turned into something now, which is the more EDM, modern EDM sound, but you could definitely hear the arpeggios, and then really fast, heavy, fast beat. But it was a good contrast, I think, to the vocals.
Yeah.
Right?
It is heavy, fast, EDM-ish. A lot of these sounds, the Pet Shop Boys always incorporate whatever's happening in dance music at that time into their music, but they kind of put their own thing on it.
Yeah.
But I like that. I like the energy, and like you mentioned, the juxtaposition with those sort of laid back vocals.
Mm-hmm.
The song is beautiful. It's about like being on the road and like, I just want to get home back to you.
Ah,
like, 'cause, you know, yeah. Home tonight. I wish I was home tonight. so I could be there with you, but I won't see you till you make it back again, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Make it back home and dry. I love that song. I love everything about it.
So dry, like out of the rain?
Yeah, sort of like home and dry. Like, okay. You know, get comfortable. Cozy. Get back cozy with me. Yeah,
good.
And before that was Tour de France by Kraftwerk. So Pet Shop Boys were like the next in line after Kraftwerk, I feel. Like they kind of carried the torch of Kraftwerk in the early 85, really. They came around, 84, 85. And Kraftwerk kind of hung it up around that time after that album. So they still kind of toured after a while, but they disappeared for many years. And I felt like Pet Shop Boys were one of the groups to carry that torch. So
that's a good pairing.
Yeah, a lot of electronic vibes there for you. And then the last two songs are going to go back and do a little soul, which you know I love. But the right kind of soul. We're going retro here. You picked a song from one of the true legends, Chaka Khan, who hit after hit after hit in the 70s and 80s with Rufus and Chaka Khan.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically the 80s, Ain't Nobody was like massive. I Feel For You was massive. It was written by Prince. I'm Every Woman, made famous by Whitney Houston again later on.
Yeah.
She had so many hits. This one wasn't necessarily like that in the size of the hit, but it's such a good song that you chose. So talk about it.
I never heard it before, and I bought this album or this vinyl just to have some essential Chaka Khan, because it's called The Very Best of Chaka Khan. And when I was previewing songs for the show, I thought, yeah, I'd really like to play Feel For You. And then I fell down a spiral because I actually, and I saw the credit was to Prince. I had no idea that was a Prince song, even back in the day. So I learned a little bit of something there. And of course, I listened to the original song, which I have on a Prince album that I'd never heard because I only listened to the hits of that song.
Yeah.
Very different, actually. Her treatment versus his, I think.
I think a lot of the songs he wrote for other people.
Yeah.
So different, like Manic Monday by the Bangles, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing Compares to You by Sinead O'Connor. They were all songs that sound nothing like Prince,
right?
But you can hear how he did write it. I Feel For You, I think you could tell he wrote it when you know it,
right? But he didn't write it for himself, because it's on one of his early albums.
Well, he did, but it was never released as a single, so he handed it off to her. Manic Monday, he never put on an album, it was an outtake he did, but he gave it to the Bangles because he liked them. Nothing Compares to You, same thing. It was like an extra song he had that he had recorded, but he never put out properly.
I see.
Gave it to Sinead O'Connor. There's so many more that I can't think of.
But I think A Feel For You is on one of his early albums.
I think it's on his first album.
Yeah, exactly.
If I'm not mistaken. But it wasn't a hit. It wasn't a single. None of them were hits. Even the singles on that album. I Think I Want to Be Your Lover is on that first album.
Yeah,
maybe.
That's a good one.
Yeah, but it wasn't a big hit. It was an R&B hit, not a pop hit. So it was kind of like modest, but he wasn't famous until 1999, Little Red Corvette. That was in 82.
Mm-hmm.
And then Purple Rain hit, and then he became the biggest star in the world in 84. So
Well, anyways, I went from that's a good story actually, and I after learning that about the Prince song, I said, well, shoot, what else on? And I heard this song. It's called Never Miss the Water. And it actually is only featured on this album. It's never been it was never released before. And I really like it. There's this little rap by a guest vocalist. Her name is Michelle
Indigliacello. Do you know who she is?
No.
She sang on, first of all, she was in, was it Arrested Development?
Oh, okay, sure.
I think it was Arrested Development. But the rapper. She sang on John Mellencamp's song Wild Night. Remember that?
No.
He did a cover of the Van Morrison song Wild Night.
Okay.
Pretty big hit in the 90s. She sang on that with him and played bass. But she was like she's a serious musician.
So the collaborator to work with.
Yeah, Michelle Indigliacello, she's legit.
Okay. Well, she does a good job here, I think, contrasting with Chaka Khan's vocals. And you know, I think Chaka Khan's called the Queen of Funk. And she is literally still performing today. That's how solid she has been. And so I think it's a treat to have a song that's relatively unknown to me. And I think you hadn't heard this before.
I knew the song.
Yeah, oh, you did?
From the Greatest Hits album CD that came out like around this time. Maybe been the same exact
this one.
Yeah. I didn't know there was a sampler version of it, but I had the CD and it was the only new song on that CD. So it was known, but I don't think it was ever a hit.
No.
I don't know.
No, but I like it. I think it's a good.
Oh, it's, She's a queen. Song. She is a diva by the singer standards. She's not like one of those, like, she's not difficult, but she's a true diva and a legend, a pure legend of R&B music and soul music. And it's cool we're going to get a chance to play her. I play Ain't Nobody on the station and Feel For You. Those are the only two.
Okay.
So, but this is cool. I enjoyed listening to it. It's definitely been about 20 years for me.
Oh, good.
If not more.
Good.
And then I'm going even further back.
Yeah.
So I'm going back in the 70s, one of the furthest, maybe the furthest back we've gone on this show. And I don't even care because it feels like it feels like I'm going hi-fi here. And true meaning of going high, because the song's called Free by Denise Williams. And it takes you on a journey. It's spacey. It's trippy. It's almost like, did I say this in my notes? Like, it does feel like it's kind of the beginnings of what hip-hop, of trip-hop became. There's this sort of hip-hop vibe to
light,
it.
Hip-hop, you called it.
Yeah. But it's really good. It's like, I think it's one of the most beautiful hypnotic songs of all time. And it, I have a playlist on my digital, what do you call it, title account.
Yeah.
It's called Ultimate Cassette. And it's all songs that are like my favorite songs from like the 70s and 80s, like when I make cassettes all the time.
Sure.
And this is on that list. It's not that many songs, probably like maybe 50 or 60 songs. It's on that. So it's in my top 100 ever, maybe. And yeah, I'm excited to play it on this show. It's not going to seem obvious, but when you hear it, I think you'll get it.
I like the, there's a lot of production on it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There's, you got like this bass line groove, and you've got some xylophones and chimes and a mixture of horns and these sustained notes. I can see where you're going with this. But I definitely did, I'm not familiar with the song.
Like, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, this is my first time.
It has been sampled a bunch in hip hop and in R&B. This is one of those songs where I put it on and I just kind of go away. You know, it takes me somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like you put the headphones on and you're just kind of, you know, just drifting away.
Just vibe out.
Yeah. This is a good late night sundown song in the summer. Like, sun's going down, kind of cooling off a little bit.
I gotcha.
You're driving, maybe a bridge
over
for you.
Over a bridge at night.
And you'll listen to this song.
All right.
So Chaka Khan, Never Miss the Water, followed by Denise Williams, a song called Free. This is total Sunday morning vibes, and I'm glad we're playing it on the Deep Dive. You and I back next week.
All right.
Thank you for doing this.
Yes, this was fun doing Deep Dive on Wax.
We had an incredible time in Willis's house, by the way, we're doing this. And you've been listening to me actually handling the vinyl between takes. That's what that sound is.
And doing a commanding job of it.
I don't know about that, but it's the real sound you're hearing. We didn't edit any of this, so let's do our last two. Thanks, brother.
All right.
Like it. Hi-Fi Dreams Deep Dive.
Nothing to